Okay, we're going to call the Senate Finance meeting to order. It's 10 o'clock. I do apologize for the late delay. Senator Murkowski's in town, and we were talking with her, actually. So my apologies to Senator Giesel and committee members. And with us today, we do have Co-Chairman Kelly, Senator Olson.
Chairman, good morning.
Morning. Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Fairclough. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. We have two bills before us today. First bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 7. We'll see how far we get through this. If we have time, then we will start Senate Bill 12, which is public procurement. If not, then we'll certainly take that up tomorrow. And I think we do have to adjourn at 10:45 today. So we'll go as long as we can. With that, is there anything to come before the committee at this time? If not, could we have the sponsor, Senator Giesel? I see you're here, and your trusty staff. If you could introduce yourselves, tell us what your bill does, and we'll take it from there. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for hearing Senate Bill 7. My name is Kathy Giesel. I'm the Senator for District M, that's Turnagain Arm and the Kenai Peninsula. Senate Bill 7 would adjust the corporate income tax for Alaska to align with the Consumer Price Index. The last time that our corporate income tax rates or brackets, excuse me, were set was in 1981. In your support documents, you have a research piece that has a chart in it that lays out the current income tax brackets and what this bill would alter them to. Currently, the 10 tax brackets move up in increments of $10,000 each, and they begin at basically $10,000 of corporate income tax, of taxable income for a corporation, and this is for C corporations. The highest tax bracket, which is 9.4% tax, is reached at $90,000 of income. The adjustment for inflation would make that highest bracket achieved at $222,000, Mr. Chair. So this makes that adjustment for inflation. It would create a significant benefit for our small and medium-sized businesses. These are C corporations, which are in a variety of industries, construction, transportation, others. There is a fiscal note. I'm going to ask, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, that Joanna Bales be consulted to illuminate for you the fiscal note and go into more details on that issue.
Okay, very good. We'll get to the fiscal note here in a little bit. And I do see that she is online, so appreciate that. Are there questions for the sponsor? Okay, no questions other than there's 9 brackets, is that correct?
There are 10 tax brackets, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and those were arrived at how again, I'm sorry?
In 1981, the tax brackets were last set or last adjusted. In the supporting documents, you have a document from Legislative Research Services. The third page of that document has the brackets. The top chart is the current brackets as they are laid out right now for our corporate income tax. The bottom chart is how they would look with this bill's passage. So you can see that right now about 13,000, actually nearly 14,000 of our corporations are making less than $10,000 of taxable income, so they fall into that lowest tax bracket of all. The $90,000 taxable income is paid by about 559 filers, and they pay the highest tax bracket of 9.4%. As you look at the second chart, the proposed tax schedule, you can see that the numbers shift. You have a column there looking at FY11, which is on the farthest right-hand side. You see the number of filers shifts, and more people appear in that lower to medium income bracket area. So this would leave more money in the hands of these small business owners, small and medium size, allowing them to expand their businesses, employ additional people, those kinds of things. These are companies that are here in Alaska. This adjustment will not affect the very large companies. You see that highest tax bracket, an income of $222,000 or more, is the highest tax bracket with the passage of this bill. They will continue to pay the 9.4%. So we're talking about those really large companies, specifically oil companies, would still be in that highest tax bracket.
Okay, and I was just also looking, you have an attachment here of other states and how they do their income tax, and it looks like it's kind of just all over the board here.
That was an interesting summary document, Mr. Chair, and if you were to sit down and do the calculations, you would see that a majority of the state, plurality of the states have a 6% tax. There are four states, at least in my brief overview, that have a higher corporate income tax than Alaska: Illinois, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and the District of Columbia. All have a higher than 9.4% top bracket.
Okay, very good. And we will ask Ms. Bales here too about the fiscal note. Concerning whenever you have less revenue coming in, $3.8 million, but I almost would imagine that we probably spend that amount just trying to collect this small amount from the small businesses, which obviously impacts their ability to survive and have a thriving business. Senator Olson, do you have a question?
Actually, I do, Mr. Chairman. As you look at this, remind me what the definition of small and medium-sized corporations are.
Well, there's no specific definition other than you can look at the income brackets, and you can see a company that's making $74,000 of taxable income is not a large business. But the C corporations can be transportation, for example, an air taxi service, construction companies.
I understand everybody being C corporation and S corporation, so that's not the issue. The issue here is if there's no definition for small and medium-sized corporations, you're essentially defining that by corporate income that's there. So you could have a very large corporation that was losing money that would be eligible for this bill. Is that correct?
You know, I'm using generic terms, small and medium-sized businesses, as I look around my own district and I look at companies that have rental services, air taxis, things like that. These are small local folks that are running their own business, some of which are C-Corps. But really, the person that can answer those kinds of detailed questions would be Ms. Bales.
One further question, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, go ahead.
Has to do with tax credits on this corporate income tax. Are there tax credits that are covered under this? Are the tax credits covered under the corporate income tax?
I would say there probably are, Senator Olson, through the chair, and that, again, would be the purview of Ms. Bales to explain to you in detail. That's part of the reason that the fiscal note, which is estimated to be $3.8 million, is likely not that large, because there are credits which lower tax liability. However, you do see the number of actual filers in FY11 on the chart.
Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming Ms. Bales would be the one that would have the answer to this question that has to do with what would the effect of this bill be on these tax credits as well.
Thank you, Senator Olson, through the chair. That is reflected somewhat in the charts that you see in that legislative research. The second chart, seeing that expecting the same number of filers, because ultimately those highest bracketed would still fall into these, and the lowest of less than $25,000 of taxable income would still be present also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Additional questions from committee members? Okay, if not, then Ms. Bales, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, if you could speak up, or we'll turn you up here a little bit, I guess. Did you hear, well, first of all, I'll allow you an opportunity to go over the fiscal note that you prepared and then hopefully address some of the questions Senator Olson had. So if you could go ahead and put your name on the record, please.
For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division within the Department of Revenue. I'm also joined here with Robin Wilson, who is our Corporate Income Tax Supervisor, who can field some questions that might be a bit more technical in nature. As far as the fiscal note goes, what we did is we took a look at the last couple of years of corporate income tax filers and basically recalculated the tax liability based on the new brackets, and that's where we came up with the $3.8 million projection, and that is based on historical tax return filings. One thing that's important to note, I think, is that under this proposed legislation, the maximum tax savings to any one corporation would be $5,828 per year. So it is limited to that, and those taxpayers, which based on the testimony already provided, we would identify as small, are those that have on average around $300,000 or less of taxable income each year, and those are the taxpayers that would benefit most from this legislation in terms of they would have the higher percentage of tax savings, even though they might have a lower amount of total dollars, but they would have the higher percentage. So I hope that that helps clarify that. And then as far as Senator Olson's questions, I think as far as the definition, the small and medium corporations, as I just explained, those are in terms of taxable income. And it is true that we do have some what we would consider large multinational corporations that have a limited amount of activity that they conduct in Alaska, and they would benefit by this legislation and be in those lower tax brackets. However, as I said, the maximum savings for any one company is around $5,800 a year. We did recognize, though, from our analysis that we do have a lot of Alaska businesses that are in those lower tax brackets, the current lower ones, and that would remain in these lower tax brackets as well, who would benefit from this. So we do have a lot of Alaska-grown C corporations that would benefit from this legislation. And then as far as the tax credits are concerned, the way that corporate income tax is calculated is we first calculate the tax liability, which is based on taxable income. And once the tax liability is calculated, the credits are then deducted from that. So the credits really, they don't have any bearing on this tax structure scheme that's set before you, because the credits are taken after tax liability is calculated. And I hope that that clears that up.
And we
do have a number of credits. We adopt the federal credits. We have, obviously, the film credit that can be taken against corporate income tax, the education credit. There's a gas storage facility credit, an exploration incentive credit for mining activities. So there are some various credits that can be taken against corporate income tax.
Okay. We do have some additional questions. First of all, I want to welcome Senator Hoffman to the Finance Committee. Senator Olson, I'll give you first opportunity to do a follow-up on some of your questions if you want to.
So, Ms. Bales, thank you for being available today. So if I'm hearing you correctly, these multinational large corporations that are out there would actually have a benefit that do, for example, oil companies that do business here in the state of Alaska. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, that is correct. We did conduct an analysis to determine just how much savings there would be to the oil and gas industry in total. We have historically had around 27 to 30 oil and gas corporations that file taxes with us. And if every one of those corporations received the maximum benefit from this piece of legislation, it would be approximately $157,000 of the $3.8 million. So the oil and gas industry as a whole would benefit very slightly from this legislation.
And Mr. Sure. Chairman, if I could just continue on with the tax credits, are there any corporations out there that would have the tax credits either federally or in the state jeopardized because of the change in the or the change that's coming out about with this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no, their tax credits would not be jeopardized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Dunleavy.
Just thank you, through the chair. Just a quick question: are we talking gross or net for purposes of this discussion?
I'll have Ms. Bales answer that question. Senator Dunleavy, through the chair.
Go ahead, Ms. Bales.
The corporate income tax is a net income tax, so it would be your net tax liability that would then be your taxable income. I mean, your tax liability is based on that net income that you've earned. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that that plays into what Senator Olson's concern was, that when you look at the net, you could have a fairly large corporation benefiting from this, but as you said, it would be very minimal. So additional questions? Senator Olson?
Actually, I do, Mr. Chairman. As we look at, I'm not sure who to bring this to, but maybe it's Ms. Bales, because it has to deal with the bill. Instead of having the brackets, the 10 brackets there that are expanded up to 25,000 from 10,000, if we were to consolidate these brackets from 10 down to 5 or and make the difference 50,000 as opposed to 25,000, would there be a change in the loss of revenue or the change in the fiscal note that we have in front of us?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, there would be some changes to the fiscal note. I expect they would be fairly minor, but we would have to run that calculation depending upon how those brackets were collapsed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. And I guess the only other question I would have is the effective date. How does that impact businesses and their filing of their taxes? I don't know. Well, maybe you could explain the effective date in the bill and how that plays.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
The way that the effective date works is that the bill would be effective immediately, but it's for tax periods that start after the effective date. So, for example, if the bill became effective, let's say July 1 of this year, it wouldn't truly go into effect for a corporation that filed on a calendar year until January 1 of 2014.
Okay, very good. Senator Bishop, did you have a question? Okay.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I have another question related to that.
Sure.
Ms. Bales, I'm assuming that you're well aware, at least by corporations, we have alternating dates that we have our corporate income tax being filed, and so that they're not coinciding with each other. If it was to be an immediate effective date, somebody that had a corporate income tax end of year being either June 30th or had during the end of the third quarter, when would that actually take effect?
Through the chair, for fiscal year filers as yourself, so let's say, for example, if your taxable fiscal year started on September 1st, and there we had an effective date, again, of, say, July 1st of this year, then this act would take effect. These new tax rates would begin on September 1st of 2013. So if we did have a fiscal year, let's say, that started April 1st of the year, and this went into effect in July, then that corporation would not take advantage of these new rates until April 1st of the following year. So it would depend on when that fiscal year started.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But it would be for a new year.
Okay. Very good. Is there anyone online to testify? Okay. Anyone in the audience that wanted to testify on this bill? I have no one signed up, so... Okay, we'll go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 7. Ms. Bales or Ms. Wilson, I frankly have no idea. I'm going to rely on the sponsor and you whether these brackets are set correctly or if we're meeting our objective here. Does administration have a position on this bill, or are you neutral?
Mr. Chairman, at this point, we are neutral on this piece of legislation.
Okay. Senator Kell, did you have a question? Okay. Any other questions, comments from the committee members? Okay. Well, Senator Giesel, you've done a good job. Looks like you answered all our questions, and your helpline on and your folks online helped us as well. I would like to have the 24 hours to sleep on this, and I think committee members too may need to digest it now that we've heard the information from you. So we're going to just hold this for now, but thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You will be getting probably a couple more letters of support in the packet. There's diverse across the state chambers of commerce that have express support, and I believe there are a couple small companies that will be sending in letters as well.
Yes, very good. I did see that. We did have the Juneau Chamber and the Alaska State Chamber, and if there's more to come, then...
There are more. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think we have time to go ahead and get started on the next bill, Senate Bill 12. Let's just do a quick brief at ease. All right, Senate Finance is back in order or session. Senate Bill 12, Public Procurement. This is Vice Chair Fairclough's bill. Senator Fairclough, will you be presenting the bill, or your trustee staff, or how would you like to handle it, Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, I can give a brief overview if you'd allow me to have my Chief of Staff and Vern Jones, Chief Procurement Officer, join at the microphones.
Very good. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senator Anna Fairclough representing East Anchorage and Eagle River. Senate Bill 12 is an attempt to modify our procurement code and streamline small procurement processes. Currently, there is ambiguity in calculating some of the procurement bids. This bill proposes to provide a specific point in time when an Alaska business license is required. There has been some challenges in past of when a person has to have a business license. It increases the threshold under which state agencies may use an informal procurement process from $50,000 to $100,000 for goods and services and from $100,000 to $200,000 for construction. Senate Bill 12 increases small procurement lease space thresholds from $3,000 to $7,000. The department has came to me and said that 7,000 needs much more time than the smaller lease procurement spaces. It advances us into an electronic world where the procurement officer could accept electronic bids as well as electronic signatures. It eliminates an outdated vendor list. The department is currently handling this process online. It makes the applications of preferences uniform. Currently, the preferences have different languages, and so they have to be interpreted and applied differently. This standardizes that. It relocates all of those preferences into one section of Alaska state statutes and clarifies which preferences may be stacked and which ones may not be combined. It eliminates a seldom used employers with disabilities preference. It changes the pay for the chief procurement officer from a range 27 to a range 25. Collectively, all the changes that are before you today streamline Alaska state statutes procurement process, allowing Alaskans to enter and engage in Alaska state service and bid on those services, providing more opportunities specifically in rural Alaska, but really and truly to all Alaskans. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Why don't we get a brief overview from the procurement officer, and then I have at least one, maybe two people online to testify, and I think I'd like to go ahead and take the testimony today since they've been waiting, and then we'll continue with the bill tomorrow. But if you have some additional comments, Mr. Jones, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vern Jones. I'm the state's chief procurement officer. As Senator Fairclough mentioned, I think throughout this bill we have simplification, clarification, and modernization. A recent Pew study indicated that the biggest barrier for businesses doing business with the government is complexity. And this bill simplifies and reduces complexity. I think one of the ways we do that is through increasing the small procurement threshold so that more procurements are done in the less formal mode, and that's easier for small businesses, especially in rural areas, I think, and particularly for building owners leasing space to the state. This would be benefit to them and reduce complexity there. It simplifies the preferences. It, for example, disability preferences. Right now, the Division of Voc Rehab has to run that program, and they're required now to go and get verification from individuals' doctors to verify that they're of their disability status. This bill would allow them to accept third-party qualifications from sources like Social Security Administration, the Veterans Administration, where these folks have already gone through and been certified as disabled. That would simplify that process as well. I think it's simpler to understand on the state practitioner side. It's easier and simpler to understand on the other side too, for the businesses that are engaging with the state. So the department supports the bill, and I think that's probably a good summary.
Okay, Senator Fairclough, additional comments?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say that we're happy to go through a sectional, but in respect for those that have waited online, we're happy to move to the public hearing and then take questions afterwards, if that's possible.
Very good. You can both come back. Lori, you don't have a chance. You have to come back tomorrow. Vernon, you'll be here tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Well, let's go on to public testimony then, and then we can ask the more detailed questions tomorrow, and you can do the sectional analysis as well, Senator Fairclough, at that time. I do have a Mr. Glenn online from Palmer.
Yes, good.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Glenn. If you could put your name on the record, please, for us, and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning. My name is Dave Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, and I'm from Palmer. I'm very happy to see this bill come before you folks, because there's one particular area that I've had personal involvement with, and that is the section to do with the State Department of Labor not recognizing disability certification from the VA. In 2010, I submitted a bid for a contract, went through all the hoops, and then was rejected because I'd submitted my paperwork from the VA. This is out of line and consistency with everything else the state does for disabled veterans. I qualify for license plate discount, hunting license for free, state ferry system, park system, several other places that fully recognize my certification from the VA. This is the only department in the state that I know of that doesn't. And I would like to interject at this point that this is not for me. I'm a Vietnam vet, Agent Orange victim, But this is for the kids coming home from Afghanistan. I don't want to see them treated like I was treated when I came home from Vietnam. I don't want to see them discriminated against over some technicality. And we must afford them every opportunity that we can to get their lives back in order. So with the passage of this bill, an elimination of the requirement that I go through a whole system of private doctors, expense, et cetera, to satisfy the Department of Labor, that would be eliminated. And what a great thing that would be to do.
Okay, Mr. Glenn, thank you very much for your testimony and your service to our country. Is there questions for Mr. Glenn? Okay, seeing none, thank you for staying with us. Sorry for the late delay or late start. Was there anyone else online? There's one more. Okay. Let's go ahead and take the last person to testify, and then we will adjourn until tomorrow. So I don't have a name.
Scott.
Mike. Let's see. Mike Kostovich from Wasilla. Mike, are you online with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. Please proceed.
Yes, Mike Kostovich here calling from Wasilla. I'm a retired commercial pilot and a Vietnam veteran. Not claiming any disability at the moment. However, 43 years ago, I got drizzled on with Agent Orange several times a week, and many do not escape that. I feel that a disability determination by the VA should satisfy any requirement by the state of Alaska, or any state for that matter. I believe it would be an expensive and foolish waste of time to require redundancy for this type of determination. And I guess I breached this subject not for myself so much as for the men and women veterans currently returning to civilian life, and in the hope that they will be treated with the dignity and honor that they deserve and find a path that is not littered with bureaucratic obstacles, and so they can get on with their life and be treated well. And that's pretty much all I had to say, and I thank you for the time.
Well, thank you for your testimony this morning, Mike. Okay, was there anyone else online? Okay, no one else online, no one in the Capitol here. So with that, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. We'll take this bill. This bill, we also have a couple board extensions that will. The suicide prevention one I would anticipate would be fairly easy, so we'll try to take that up, as well as take up the previous bill we heard today as well. So if there's nothing else, come for the committee. We're adjourned. Floor session starts at 10:45.